with Gabriele Campagnano, now at the Weizmann Institute, and Ulrich Weiss of the University of Stuttgart. And so what we wanted to study was the quantum system constituted by two spins one off that are interacting between each other, and they're also interacting with an environment. Now, of course, we like to understand what is the coherence process that this system undergoes for obvious reasons that are important in quantum informations, because of course we want to have a code that is some subspace of the Hilbert space in which we encode and manipulate information. And if the by means of applying some unitaries that correspond to some Hamiltonians, that everything would be fine if there were no environment that would spoil everything. And everything is spoiled because of the environment, the total Hamiltonian of the system, the Hamiltonian is not just the Hamiltonian of the system, and we have a dissipative effect. Now, there is a very old classic result, classic in the sense that it's old, by Leggett and others about what happens to a spin, one half, in presence of the environment. This is a seminal paper that, of course, has been of guidance for us. Nevertheless, and it's already very complicated for one spin to solve the dynamics for the open system. Of course, what you don't see in the one spin case is entanglement, because you cannot entangle it. So the minimum thing to see what happens to entanglement when there is a decoherence process in an open quantum system is to have two qubits. This is what we studied. And so I'll present the model for the coupled spins with the dissipative environment. And we solved the system using the master equation and solving the master equation. So it's not, it's an analytical solution. Although I will not show you the formula for the analytical solution because it takes many pages, but I'll show you graphs. And I'll show you the entanglement dynamics and how the process of relaxation happens and implications for quantum information. Okay. So as I was saying, the model is not, so imagine that we have two interacting qubits. So in general, we could write a Hamiltonian for two interacting qubits in this way. So we have a V term that is the interaction between the two, and then the Hamiltonian for the first spin and the second spin. Okay, now of course, if there is an environment, this will have some, this is a quantum system with a Hamiltonian HB, and then the two interact. So we have a third Hamiltonian that is the interaction Hamiltonian. And we can have two possible situations about the environment and the interactions, so which is in this cartoon. So here you see the first spin and the second spin, and they interact via the term in V. And each spin has, this, its own environment. So this is the most general case. I mean, the two buff can be in principle uncorrelated. Nevertheless, in some cases of importance, for instance, when you are considering quantum dots, the buff can be considered the same. They share the same environment because they're very close. And so we have the same environment that is this big cloud here. Okay, so this is the model. And how do we model the environment and the interaction? So for us, the environment is a collection of infinite harmonic oscillators. So this is just the Hamiltonian for the sum of infinite harmonic oscillators. And the interaction is as this form. So we have sigma interacting with the operators of destruction creation for the buff. And when we have two different buff, two uncorrelated environments, we have two terms that are completely different. These coefficients here are independent. Okay? So in the case where we have only one spin, so we don't have this term, and of course the Hamiltonian, the system Hamiltonian has just this term. And we have the seminal model considered by Leggett and others in the review of modern physics that is called the spin boson problem. Okay. Then we also studied the case in which the environment is common. So we don't have two different coefficients, C1 and C2, for the coupling, and they couple in this way. So it's the same environment coupling to both spins. Of course, both are not a generic form of the interaction with the environment. It's a specific model for the thing, for the noise. It's not a general model for the noise. Yeah.
Or strength.
Yes. Yes. So this is one environment with the same coupling for both. So it's a specific way of interacting with the environment. That's correct. Okay. So in treating the environment, the only important thing is the spectral function, and we consider this environment being a ohmic bath, meaning that this coefficient S is equal to 1 in this spectral function. And we studied the case in which the coupling with the two baths, even when there are two different baths, are the same. So there is one coupling kappa, and the two baths are at the same temperature T. And we consider the case of weak coupling, of course, which is the case of interest for applications, but also moderate couplings. So we will have not huge couplings, but not necessarily very small. Okay, so what we want? What we want is to find the evolution for the reduced system. We cannot take into account all that happens in the whole world, and but we want to know what happens to the system. So, if this is the density matrix for the whole Hilbert space, meaning the degrees of freedom of the environment and of the system, of course we have a Hamiltonian, and this is we have a Hamiltonian evolution, which is unitary. But when we want to see what happens in time at the subsystem, the system of the two spins, we have to trace out the degrees of freedom of the environment. And now this rho of T can be written like some map, the linear map that acts on rho zero, but this is not a unitary map anymore. And because there is dissipation, dissipation, the coherence towards the environment. And the differential equation that rules this process called master equation. And it can be cast in this form, in which, so you have that rho dot, the matrix elements, have this part, plus this part. Here we have the differences, the Born frequencies. And we have this tensor that is called the Redfield tensor. And this, it is defined in a as a complicated combination of these gamma functions, which I will not define, but the essential information that they contain is that they contain information about the correlation functions of the buff. So using the spectral function that I showed you before, you can compute the correlation functions of the buff, and you can compute these gamma functions and build this tensor, and then you can cast the master equation for the subsystem in this way, and then you have to solve it, which is not trivial, but it's just math, right? It's, you have to find some way to solve this differential equation. And so we did it.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, so we are in a weak or not too strong coupling approximation. We are in the Born approximation, which means that the bath is not disturbed by the by the system, and we are also in the Markov approximation. So we're saying that the bath has no memory. So these are very usual approximations that one makes in the treatment of open system. Of course, they're not the most general one, but they're good enough to model some kind or some types of open quantum systems. So these are the approximations that we are playing with. Okay, so now imagine that we solve this equation. So we now have the expression of all the matrix elements over rho t for the subsystem, for the system of the two spins. Okay, once you have that, you can look at them. And sometimes they tell you something, some other times they're boring. But two quantities that you can compute once you have the density matrix of the system are entanglement. And here we have two quantities that are of interest. So the first one is how the two spins are entangled together. And now usually there is not a measure of entanglement for mixed states. This would be a mixed state because you are already tracing out to the environment. So you get a mixed state. So you don't usually know how to treat the system. But for the case of two spins, one of you can. There is this quantity, concurrence, discovered by Wouters. And so what one does is to take the density matrix and multiply it by the tensor product of the sigma-wise matrices in this way. And then one finds the eigenvalue. The eigenvalues and the concurrence, the maximum between these two numbers. And this measures what is the entanglement between the two spins, no matter if you start from a pure state or a mixed state. The other quantity is that the reduced density matrix of the system now is represent a mixed state and represents how much the system has become a mixed because we traced out to the environment. Now, usually, I mean, in quantum information, we say, oh, this is the entanglement with the other part. This is, of course, only true when we start from a pure state. Then all the mixedness is due to the fact that you traced out something else. Here, it's not exactly so because we have a rho that is the rho of a system at the temperature T. So it's already mixed. Of course, in 40 very, very low, or for T equals zero, ideally, this is the entanglement with the bath. Otherwise, it's mixed both because of the entanglement and because of thermal mixing. So, but we will show, when we show what happens to the von Neumann entropy, we will, have to pay attention to the case when the temperature is very low, because then it has the meaning of entanglement with the environment. Okay. So here I've written four states for this system of two spins. So we are in the basis of up and downs. And these are the four states that we chose as initial states for the system, in which we initialized the states, and then computing the evolution. And this third state is very important for two reasons. So first of all, of these four, it's also an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. The others are not eigenstates. So what this means is that, now imagine that we had a purely Hamiltonian evolution, so no environment. So what would happen to the evolution of the state of the system, if we start from any of these other three, is that we would see your oscillations, because we are not in an eigenstate. Whereas here, we wouldn't see oscillations, because this is an eigenstate. Then, of course, there is the environment. And then, in general, you can expect to see oscillations and the damping of these oscillations, because we are dissipating towards the environment. And then, at some point, the system has relaxed. We are in something that we can expect to be maybe the Gibbs state, but I will show you that it's not always the case. But in any case, it is a state that is invariant at that point. I mean, doesn't change anymore with time. So you cannot have oscillations. when the system has relaxed. But when you start from this state, you never have oscillations because this is an eigenstate. The second important thing is that in the case of a common bath with the form of interaction that I showed you, this state is also a one-dimensional decoherence-free subspace, which means that the effect of the environment on this state is the identity. So this state will just evolve as if the environment was not there. So if I start from this state and I solve my equations, I see that all the matrix elements of the reduced density matrix are constant in time and they have the value that pivot equals zero. Okay? So the coherence-free subspaces are very important because in quantum information, if you have a coherence-free subspace, and which depends on the model for the noise that you have, so they are not universal. But if you have one for a model of noise that you believe to be realistic, then you can safely do quantum information, the quantum processing, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, the main problem with the coherence-free subspace is that sometimes they are useless. For instance, here it's clear. This is a one-dimensional Hilbert space, so you cannot do anything. You cannot encode anything. And second, they are fragile. If I change a little bit, I add a perturbation, either to the Hamiltonian or to the interaction Hamiltonian, the symmetry is spoiled. So, and by spoiling the symmetry, you also spoil the property of being a decoherence-free subspace. And now I have to say that all these things are known to be true and they've been proven algebraically, you know, in a general theory of the coherence-free subspace. But it's very nice to see these things, you know, really on the field, like having a state, you know how it evolves in time, and you see it. You see that the rho of t is constant. It's just a constant when you start from this state. Okay, so these are the four initial states. And okay, so what I will show you here are for the four initial states, A, B, C, and D, that are repeated here for convenience, and for this value of the parameters, so B is the parameter that is the coupling between the spins. Delta is the energy gap between up and down for the spins. This is the coupling with the environment. And this is the temperature, beta. And this means very, very small temperature. So this is realistically like a system at zero temperature, beta equals 10. And what you see in these four graphs are the temporal evolution of the von Neumann entropy and of the concurrents. So let me, for the system with the two independent baths. So let me illustrate it to you. So the blue curve is the von Neumann entropy. And what you see is this, that at the beginning, very quickly, the system, which is prepared initially in a state that is factorized with the environment, so the von Neumann entropy is zero, but very quickly gets very entangled with the environment. And then it slowly decreases, this entanglement. And why it decreases? Because when the system relaxes, because the temperature is zero, it has to go to the ground state eventually. Because any quantum system, if it's interacting with the bath at temperature zero, eventually we find the ground state. By the way, this is also a very common belief, but it's very difficult to prove it. And here we see it explicitly. It goes back to the ground state, but the ground state is a pure state, so it's not entangled with the bath anymore. And you can also see a very important phenomenon that there are two time scales. One is the time scale. So they're commonly called the T1 and T2. So the time of decoherence and the time of dissipation. So here the system is decohering because it's getting entangled with the system. And this is a very fast process. And then there is the dissipation process that kicks in at some point and dumps this down. And this has a different time scale, as you can see. The second curve, the red curve, is the concurrence. Now, because the system is oscillating, the concurrence between the two spins is oscillating. So that's why you see this strange figure. And it's the resolution of the screen here is not as good as on the computer, but it's not solid, of course. There are oscillations. But you can see something that at some point, the concurrence is zero. It stays at zero for a while, and then it revives and reaches some equilibrium. And this phenomenon of entanglement concurrence has been shown in other similar systems where you, so it's not the first time that somebody studied the system with two spins in external bath, but so far the two spins were not interacting. So the two spins were each just interacting through the environment. And of course, if we had two independent baths, this wouldn't happen. But in the system with two spins with a common environment, you would have a similar phenomenon. Somehow they interact, and you can have a revival of this entanglement. And, well, and you can see that for the other three states that are not eigenstates, you have a very similar behavior. Yeah. Well, this has much bigger oscillations, but the pattern is similar. And OK, so this is what happens to the state C, that is an eigenstate. And you have revival too, but you have no oscillations. So somehow, this is a clean way to see what's really happening to the revival, modding out all the oscillations that you here don't have, because this is an eigenstate for the system Hamiltonian. Questions?
Your two spins, the internal Hamiltonian of the two spins does not distinguish between the two spins, right? You have the same x-terms in the coupling pair. So how would that affect these curves if you change the deltas for the two spins?
Okay, so here, this is a good question. Here, they are not changed very much. These results are not sensitive to that. Although, what I'm going to show you in the next slide, it depends on that very much, and I'll show you why. And so in the next slide, I'm studying the system with one bath that has the specific form of interaction that I showed you before, in which you have a decoherence free from states. Now, the details here are important, the details of the coupling in order to have a decoherence free from states. If the two spins didn't have the same delta, I believe there would still be a decoherence free of space, but it wouldn't be this state. It would be some other combination. So it's when the two deltas are the same, then psi c is a decoherence free of space. Otherwise, it usually depends on delta.
Is the entanglement changing in the same way in the case of D and D? It's just because of the space.
Sorry,
the entanglement, the concurrence.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, here the oscillations are more violent.
Sorry?
The oscillations of the concurrence here are more violent than here.
Is there equivalent? I mean, they look very similar, but you have different scales? Or?
So these are plotted in the same scale. So they are qualitatively similar,
okay,
but they have different amplitude of oscillations.
So the scale that is marked is for the
entities,
no?
Oh no, you're right. So this has a different scale. But yes, so I understand your question. So no, even in the same scale, they are slightly different. They are not identical. They're very similar, but not identical. Yes, so this is 1.4 is the concurrence or entanglement with the bath, and here it's a different scale because it's 0.9. So I've used different scales to just put as much of the curve as possible in the graph. But in any case, they are not exactly the same. It's not just a change of scale. They're slightly different, but at least I am not able to read anything in this difference. They're just different quantitatively. Okay. Now let's look at the case when you have a single bar. So now you can have a decoherence free subspace, which is the singlet state that I showed you before. Let's use, for example, I could have used any state in the orthogonal complement, in the space orthogonal to the singlet state. So I chose this one, and we computed the same things. And, well, it's almost the same, it's not. So as long as the evolution has nothing to do with the coherence free subspace, nothing happens. I mean, it's still the same. You can still say that there is this revival of entanglement and the two different times for the decoherence dissipation processes. Well, pretty much with this. Also notice that the time scales for the equilibrium are in the units in which we are, you know, about 400. And don't remember how many seconds they are for these values of delta, kappa, beta. It's 400 in these units. Okay. Now, what would happen if I put exactly the coherence, the singlet state? Nothing. So the entanglement with the bath would be zero. The concurrence would be the maximum one. All along, because nothing is happening to the state. So at this point, we asked ourselves, so what would happen if instead we initialized the system in a coherent superposition of this of a state in the decoherent subspace and one that is decoherent normal? And so what would you expect? Well, when we asked ourselves this question, we thought that somehow the fact that it is not a decoherent free subspace anymore, because it's just a superposition of something that is decoherent free and something that is not, that it's not a DFS. So it would just decoherent normal. It would prevail the fact that is, it's a little bit like you have a room with two doors and you expect to not have much dissipation towards the environment because I close one of the two doors and I left the other one open. It's still dissipating almost the same, or maybe it's half of it, but and no, this is not the case. This is what you see. So same time scale. And in the beginning we thought, oh, what's going on? Then we continued to plot this curve for much bigger periods of time. Yes, eventually it does relax, but it's completely different. For a very long time, there is the dissipation, the damping is very, very tense. So this is the state. It's a very simple state, but algebraically is the equal superposition of the state that you saw before and the singlet state. And so it's not the coherence free, but it's different. It's more robust. And we thought this is interesting because then maybe you have a concept of quasi decoherence free subspace. It's not just a precise algebraic notion, but it has quantitative effects. Now I could, this would mean, for instance, that now in this subspace, I can encode a qubit. And it's quite resilient for a long time. And we have an analytic reason to show why this happened. Okay, so physically, now we understand what happens, is that a state that is straddling the two subspaces, the one that doesn't decohere with the one that does decohere, has to somehow have a behavior that is in between the two. And in this case, the average between infinite and zero time is happens to be 10 to the third. So, if one looks in the formula, one can see this, that. So in general, the solution to the master equation that I wrote can be cast in this form. So you have the initial state for an exponential. Now, these small gammas are a complicated function of the correlation functions of the bulk. So they are, you can derive them from the bigger gamma in a way that is very long. It's not straightforward. The omegas are the difference in energy between the states. Okay, so of course this has nothing to do with dissipation. See, this is an imaginary part. This gives us oscillations, and this is the dissipation part. Now, what happens is this: that they behave like the hyperbolic cotangent, but when, because of the symmetries, for instance, the element gamma 1,3 that plays a role in the matrix element gamma 1,3. So when you have the coherence free subspace, you have this minus one. And here, instead, you have this plus one. So you see that a very low temperature means beta very big. This thing goes, so the hyperbolic cotangent goes to one. 1 minus 1 is 0, and this step is not there. And only then, otherwise, it has some numerical value, I mean, because it will be 2 in this case, but it doesn't go to 0, it doesn't cancel exactly, and you have the normal behavior. So it's really because of the presence of the coherence free subspace that this happens.
Sorry, I'm kind of puzzled. Shouldn't the long-term state just be a mixture of state in the coherence free subspace and
a classical mixture? You want to know what happens?
And the others, the orthogonal subspace?
Yeah. So if I start with the classical mixture, okay. So
no, you start with superposition.
I started with superposition, yes.
Yeah, but because one term of that superposition is decoherent, it'll become a mixture in the long time limit, right?
Yes. But it's the long time limit that is changing. How long it takes? In the limit, it goes, it relaxes like the others, but it takes longer. So the dynamic, it's the.
But if you really have a DFS.
What do you mean it relaxes? That's what I don't understand. You're saying that it relaxes like the others, but it shouldn't be relaxing to a totally mixed state, right? It should be.
No, it's not relaxing. Oh, I understand your question. No, it's not relaxing to the total mixed state.
Right, okay.
So there are two. One thing is what is the equilibrium state.
Right.
And one thing is how long it takes to get there. So you're right, it's not the completely mixed state. Or it's not the Gibbs state. I'll show you what state it is, and you will immediately recognize that it is. So the final state is the same as if I started with a classical mixture of the two. But the dynamics is different. So there is really a quantum, something that depends on the superposition. There is an interference process why this is going slower.
So do you have an understanding of why that is? I mean, I can't see why that should be, because the spaces are orthogonal. They don't mix up at all under either the internal Hamiltonian or the environment Hamiltonian. So.
Yeah, so in fact, we didn't expect it to happen. At the beginning, we thought that, yeah, we would maybe see some quantitative change, but nothing dramatic. When you look at the solution of the questions, then, well, you see it. You see where the fact that it's prepared, that the initial population in the coherence free subspace implies that at the end of this number will be like this instead of like this, and but yes, it comes out from the solution of the differential equation.
Okay, I mean, have you tried like different superpositions and different states? And
yes.
How
yes.
Does it depend on how much?
So it basically only depends on the, so it doesn't depend on which of the other states I get.
That makes sense.
And we also tried not to the equal superposition, and the results were very similar. I mean, we didn't change order of magnitude.
Okay, but I mean, I guess I'm. Why don't you finish?
Okay. Somebody else want to ask?
I'll wait till later.
Okay. So, what is the final state? So, the final state is in the case of the double bath, there is no decoherence free subspace and it's the Higgs state. So, when beta is large, it will be the ground state. Otherwise, if beta is at high temperature, it will be the completely mixed state. Whereas now imagine that my initial superposition will be with coefficients A in the non-decoherent free subspace and B in the other one. So my initial state will have A squared over 3, A squared over 3, B squared, A squared over 3. Okay, and in the end, it will relax to this one state. So the population in the decoherent free subspace is constant. And then you have this. And again, if you, so you will see that even at low temperature, you're not in the ground state of the Hamiltonian. That's why the entanglement with the bath doesn't go to zero. There is still some mixing. So they relax in this way, that it's not the decoherence of the space. But this is, so let me go skip this two, and then I will go back to that. This is exactly what happens just with a different dynamics, which is the important thing, though, when you start with a classical mixture. So this is a classical mixture between two states that are orthogonal to the decoherence free subspace. And sorry, the second one, they are orthogonal. They're both not in the decoherence free subspace. And here they are one in the decoherence free subspace and the other one not. And you see that the approach to the equilibrium is the same. The final state is different because in one case, so when they're both orthogonal to the decoherence free subspace is the big state, in the other case is this one. But their dynamics is the same. Only when you have a coherent superposition, the dynamics changes completely, the approach to equilibrium. So this is the major result. Here, I order graphs in which I show for completeness what happens if I change k, kappa. That is the coupling with the environment. So now these are moderate couplings, because before I was 0.001. Now they are 0.1, 0.2, and so on. And you see, so these are the phenomenon entropies for these values, and these are the concurrences for these values. And you see that essentially kappa is the time, is a global time scale. Changing the interaction with the environment stretches the time, which was expected. It's confirmed. And then what happens in temperature? And also here you, okay, so at very low temperatures, so here we also try 20, which is very, very low. So you go to the ground state. Well, if it's the temperature is not too small, then you have some thermal mixing at the end, which is not entanglement. And you can have a very mixed state for higher temperature. And here you have concurrence. So what you can see is that if the temperature is too big, you don't have revival of the concurrence anymore. The concurrence will be washed out by the thermal noise. So only for very small temperatures, you have a revival of concurrence.
So
a slide entitled semi-DFS.
Yeah.
And I'm confused, perhaps, about what that means. You've analyzed a coherent superposition of a state that's in the DFS and a state that's not, and pointed out that it has certain some persistence of coherence. But a DFS is not just one state. It's an entire collection of states, right? A DFS contains all states within that subspace.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But here, what you have is, and of course that's closed under linear combination, et cetera, et cetera. But absolutely. Here what you have is a single state that you've looked at. So is there a structure here? Or we can't say that this is closed under the superposition,
no, you're right.
For instance.
You're right.
So, but is there something beyond that?
So, okay, so first of all, what I showed you is that that state is a coherence free subspace, only it's useless because it's 1D. So, I mean, you cannot read the superpositions, but it's a 1D subspace. Yes, what I'm saying is that if you are allowed to violate, I mean, I don't know what is the algebraic structure of this. I don't know. Probably, I would dare to say that there is not algebraic structure. It's not an algebraic thing, and so I don't see it in the algebra. Is it in the fact that you have this coherent superposition, and one part, one branch, like to the coherent, and the other one is stuck? And somehow they are tied together, and it's a quantum effect.
But is there a way that we might be able to use this to store quantum information better than one would expect, or because that would require?
Oh yes. So my point is this: what I'm showing you here, this is an example in which I plotted entanglement. But if you just plotted the matrix elements, you see the same pattern. The matrix elements, like row 1-3 here. So if you put, for instance, the row 1-3 matrix element, that gives you some information about the coherence of this superposition, they cohere much more slower. And basically in the limit of beta omega being infinite, the relaxation time is infinite. So it means that at zero temperature or for a huge gap, so what will govern the process is beta omega, because this is what you have here.
Which is the 1-3 element again?
Sorry?
What 1-3? Which element is that? That's between.
So 3 is the state in the coherence free subspace, and 1 is
the positive.
Yes.
So it's also the entanglement.
And I show this as an example, but it is not specific. I mean, if I had chosen another superposition.
So if you said you tried adjusting the amount of 3 versus 1 in the superposition, and the decay stays the same?
Yes.
Roughly speaking?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So the parameter that governs that is not the amount of superposition, but is beta times omega.
Right. But for say like this, if you had a 2-3 component, even with a superposition of, sorry, not a 2-3, a 1-2. Oh, you have that there.
Yes.
The 1-2 is part of the case.
Yes. The 1-2, you get that this is not 0, so it decays, no.
Oh, I see. Because
there is minus 1 and plus 1.
Right. Okay, so that was decaying fast. And whereas the 2-3 component would be presumably also decaying slowly.
Like the gamma 1-3.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so this. So, I mean, maybe the thing to look at, have you looked at this, within the phrase of plastic, I mean, if you have say, two different states that are of this form, like, you know, 1 plus 3 versus 2 plus 3. At what rate do you lose distinguishability between them? And it seems like there could be, that could be slower also, because you can take advantage of this kind of long-term coherence between the 1, 3, and 2, 3. But that's a kind of nice operational question that you can just focus on. You haven't looked at that yet?
No. So the thing is that in the old theory of the coherence free subspaces, it's an exact theory. And it's carried out by, you know, their theorems, and then you can only apply it for specific examples in which it's too exact. In the moment when it's not too exact, you don't know what to do. I mean, it tells you nothing in the theory. And because the only thing you can do is to solve the master equation. That gives you the dynamics for the not exact case.
So perhaps I missed the first minutes of the talk, so I don't know whether you have addressed that. But to put this into perspective, there was, I guess, previous work. This model is quite natural.
Previous works, first of all, you didn't have interacting qubits. So people were very interested in seeing how the two qubits talk because of the bulk, of the common bulk. And so they didn't do interacting qubits because the interaction makes the question. It didn't seem interesting, and it's technically complicated when you have that interaction trying to solve the master equation. So
the main difference is the interaction plus the bulk.
In the model, the main difference is that we have the interaction between the qubits. And nobody. I also guess that if you didn't have interaction, then you wouldn't have tunneling between the two qubits that is induced by the environment, right?
What do you mean by
that? Now I'm thinking, what would happen, for instance, to the quantum memory if I have a superposition of the two, but they do not interact? You still have the two things that people didn't do before was, first of all, to consider the model in which the two qubits interact, and second, to try what happens to the coherent superposition over the DFS and the non-DFS. Sometimes also I think of the different communities, because people who do spin boson models pretty much don't know what the coherence superspaces are. They're not so much interested in these aspects.
Okay.